WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz Sandy Springs.
Good morning and welcome to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning, 9 to 11. Today is all about Email Bag Sunday. We usually do calls, questions, but once in a while, we'll take all those fantastic emails that we get. Some of them are impossible to answer. Some of them are really easy. A lot of them are kind of in the middle and very helpful. And those are the ones that we try to bring to the show every once in a blue moon here on Sunday mornings. So that's what we've done today. In studio with me, Andrea Risk.
Good morning.
Are you excited to be here?
Yes.
Mildly?
Yes.
Feel
I'm
a lot of coffee?
Excited to be here. Yes.
I
plenty of
have.
Coffee.
All right.
Yes.
So that's Andrea is not necessarily, you're not a real, necessarily a financial person. You're more of a media specialist, if you will.
That is correct.
Maybe a question asking expert.
Right.
You're a professional question asker.
I'll go with that.
Of financial questions.
Yes.
So first of all, we protect your anonymity.
Yes.
So if you're Bob from Texas, you're not really Bob from Austin, Texas. It's typically we're making up a name. And that way you can still feel free to continue to email us and continue to ask questions. And me and the Money Matters team will get back to you. The email that we typically answer is the email address radio@yourwealth.com and then my website, wesmoss.com, where there's a contact us button. So let's dig right into Email Bag Sunday.
All right. This question, I think this one's actually pretty interesting. I'm interested to know your response to this one. This is Betty.
I'll be the judge.
Betty in Chapel Hill.
Where real basketball is played.
Right, right.
And a real education is had, if you will. It's Chapel Hill, which would not be Durham, which is where Duke is.
Oh, I see.
And that's a place that I stayed far away from on my days in Franklin Street. Wow, almost two decades ago.
All right.
Time flies when you're having kids.
you're dating yourself. All right. She says, Betty does, I am planning on retiring and trying to decide whether to take the monthly pension or the 50-50. I will be 62.
What's the 50-50? What do you mean? Half pension?
Half pension.
And get some lump sum.
Right.
Keep going.
I will be 62 and taking my Social Security early. Amount for that will be $1,560 a month. If I take the monthly pension, the amount will be $2,860. The 50-50 would be about $240,000 to be invested in a monthly amount of $1,435.
And a monthly amount, the reduced pension.
Right,
of
$1,435. My question is, which scenario would be best for me to take? And I know you get this question a lot about whether people should take a lump sum or should they, you know, wait it out.
Well, in this case, too, it looks like Betty's spending, too, is she says she needs $3,000 a month, which is her monthly spending, which is pretty reasonable. It's a little hard to do that when you've got three kids.
Right.
But when you're retired, kids are out of the house, house is paid for. I see a lot of people live on $3,000 a month, and it's fine. But here's the thought, is that the first thought goes back to the whole pension question. Do you take a pension or do you take a lump sum? Companies really want you to take the lump sum so that they get you off the books. They give you a one-time, what seems like a whole lot of money. And in this case, that is a lot of money because they'd rather do that today than be on the hook. God forbid if you live to your 100. So they'd rather give Betty, they'd probably rather her take $240,000 and the lesser amount than take the full amount. But that's why everybody has to do the pension test. And anytime you take a monthly amount and don't take the lump sum, it's got to pass the 6% test. I wrote an article about this on Clark Howard. It's for clarkhoward.com. It's on Clark's website. And I take you through the math on whether it passes 6% or not. And very simply, you take your monthly amount, let's call it $1,000 a month, times 12 is $12,000. And then you relate that back to what you could have, what you could get as a lump sum amount. So if you're offered $12,000 a year or $100,000, then you're better off, that's 12%, you're way better off taking the $12,000. If you are offered $150,000, it starts to become a little harder just to take the monthly amount. So you've really got to just do the math, and the simple math again is monthly amount times 12 divided by the lump sum you could get if you don't take the monthly. And if it's above 6% or 7%, then you really should consider taking the monthly. Otherwise, just take the cash, just take the lump sum, and then you invest it and use my $1,000 a month rule. $1,000 a month for every $240,000 you have, it's about $1,000 a month. So in Betty's case here, we're looking at her socials. I'm going to round this up for our listeners so you can kind of get a handle of this. It's about $1,600 a month in social. And the pension, the half pension, is about $1,400 a month. And she gets a lump sum, $240,000. So that means her social and pension together, it's about $3,000 a month. Her 240 should produce about $1,000. So she's really netting she'd have about $4,000 a month. Now, she'll have some taxes to pay, but let's call that scenario one is about $4,000, which solves for her spending need. The second scenario, she'll still get her pension, but then she'll still get her social, about $1,600 a month, and then her full pension, which is double the $1,425 a month. So it's $2,850 a month. It's a lot more, but no lump sum.
Right.
So in that scenario, add those two together, that's about $4,400 a month. Well, scenario one is about $4,000 a month, but she has the whole 240
right.
in the family forever.
Right.
And it's money she can get to if she really needs it. So I think that she's much better off. Now, let's assume she doesn't have a lot of other assets. That would make this to be, in my opinion, a really easy decision. She's better off taking the lump sum and the half pension. So it's a little bit less income. It's $4,000 a month versus $4,400. But then she's got $240,000 in an IRA that she can get to when she needs it.
Absolutely.
So to me, in this particular scenario, and this also shows that all these other variables come into play. If you have lots of other money and lots of other savings, then you might lean more towards a pension. So there's other variables that go into the decision-making process. But from what I know about our friend in Chapel Hill, she should probably do the half pension and the full lump sum.
Got it. Makes complete sense.
Next question, please.
All right. This is from Christopher in Arkansas. Christopher's asking, I'm considering taking some cash and buying bonds to get some more yield, but I'm afraid of rising rates killing my bond prices. Tell me what to do.
So this might be a Arkansas first. I'll get a whole lot of questions from Arkansas. Maybe you just made that up. In fact, you probably did now that I think about it. And this is, I would say, is a relatively common issue that we all are having right now. Me, you, Ryan Ely, Scott Maxim here in the studio, all of us listeners. We've got interest rates on cash that just, it really doesn't pay a lot. Now, if you're sitting in a Fidelity or a Vanguard or a Schwab money market, super safe, but literally paying 0.01. So just call it zero. If you go to a bank, Ally Bank, you go to Synchrony Bank, you go to Brand Bank for that matter, you can get closer to 1%. So you can get close to 1% on money. You've got to shop around, get a look around. It's easy. You can easily find it if you're doing an online bank. But the reality here is that bonds are going to pay you a higher level of interest. You've got to be careful, though, about the principal side of the equation. Corporate bonds, easily 3.5%, even in a bond ETF. High yield bonds are more like 5.5%, 6%. So you get a lot more yield. And again, relative to zero or even one, 3, 4, and 5 is a lot. It's multiples beyond what your cash is paying you. However, you've got to remember the two things, the yield ladder. The bottom of the ladder, you got low risk, low yield. The higher we go up, every rung, 2%, 3%, 4%, once we're getting up to 6% and 7%, we're talking about pretty risky bonds here. So I believe that over time, owning a mutual fund, or really more specific, an ETF, 100, 200, 300 high yield bonds in a really low cost ETF, then you mitigate away a lot of the risk of a default. And high yield bonds do default. They historically have a 3-4% default. In this economy we're in today, it's much lower than that. It's more like 1-2. So you're not really at risk of losing everything because you've got lots of bonds in a high yield bond ETF. But the price can certainly change a lot. And if the economy slows down and things get worse, you could see a 5 to 10% reduction in price in a high-yield bond ETF easily. Now, you're getting 5 or 6%. Same thing with a corporate bond. As rates go up, there's less of a credit issue. But if rates spike up quickly, which we don't think they're really going to spike up very quickly, the Fed's still being very patient, and they're going to methodically do this over time, then you can certainly see a drawdown on the price of even a bond ETF. Now, totally different story, bond ETF versus a stock ETF. A stock ETF is going to move 10, 20, 30, 40% to the downside in a really terrible market. A bond ETF, if the stock market goes down, bond ETF is probably going to go up in price. And even if interest rates go up, you're not going to have this dramatic price reduction in bonds or bond ETFs. You can see a drag or a slight negative, but then you've got your income to make up for it. So the balance here is to understand that, look, it's not just a, it's not, buying bonds isn't just like buying a money market. Oh, I have 5% bonds, I just get, there's the price risk as well. But if you're overweighted in cash, then yes, I do believe that a well-crafted multiple area of the bond market, corporate bonds, government bonds, and high yield, and floating rate bonds, you put them all together and you have a collective yield of 3 or 4%, I do think that that's a good place for more conservative money over time, particularly relative to just sitting money sitting around doing zero in a money market. All right, you're listening to Money Matters. We're doing an email bag this Sunday. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here with Andrea Risk. Email me, radio@yourwealth.com, or my website, wesmoss.com, to find out more about my book, You Can Retire Sooner Than You Think. Stay tuned for more Money Matters, news, weather, traffic straight ahead, right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Welcome to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning with Andrea Risk this morning, because we're doing an email bag, and it's time to answer the questions that you send us, me and the Money Matters team, throughout the week. The radio, the email address, radio@yourwealth.com. Andrea Risk from the South, what's going on? You're a question-asking expert.
I am.
What's the next one?
All right. This is from William from Marietta, and he says, "Hi, Mr. Moss. We have three children, ages 13, 10, and 7. We want to save for their college. What would be the best vehicle? My wife and I both have a Roth IRA. One is valued at $54,000 and the other has $12,000. We are both in our mid-40s and have a combined income of about $140,000 a year. We don't have much in savings since my wife stayed home for about 11 years, but she has recently returned to work. Any help would be appreciated. Thanks."
There's a real misnomer in America that parents are supposed to just save everything for their kids to go to school. And even if it's 50 grand a year by the time they get there, then you're supposed to pay it as a parent. So you're supposed to pay 100 or 200 or 300 grand per kid per college. And for this individual, William from Marietta, he could be looking at $1 million. I have three kids. They're a little younger than this, but it's a similar age spread. And I think parents should understand, they shouldn't feel guilty that they have to pay for everything. Because in the real world, and I've seen this for almost 20 years now, about how people really pay for college, even from pretty high earning families, is that it's a third rule. A third comes from saving. So yes, you want to save, but you don't have to save for the whole entire amount. If you can target about a third of what college is going to cost, then that's a home run. A third from your current cash flow, and that also means you can't really retire until your kids are out of college, and that's fine. Not many people can. And then a third in student loans. God forbid kids have skin in the game. And I know as parents, we want to have our give our kids an education and they're debt-free, but there's also a lot to be said about having skin in the game and having the student have responsibility for part of that loan. So my advice here to William and Marietta with the age of his kids is that, yes, definitely save $5,000 to $10,000 per year for college, but that needs to be on the trajectory to get you to about a third of what it will cost. And that is a responsible way to do it. And more importantly, I'm not preaching here about how it should be done. That's how I really see it get done in the real world. And I've seen that over time. All right, you're listening to Money Matters. We are doing an email bag Sunday where Andrea Risk is reading questions that you've sent into the show. radio@yourwealth.com is the email. I'm your host, Wes Moss. Stay tuned, news, weather, traffic, then more Money Matters here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Good morning and welcome to Money Matters here on WSB. We're here every Sunday morning, 9 to 11, to take your calls and questions. Once in a while, a couple times a year, we'll do an email bag where we get lots of emails throughout the week. They come to our email address, radio@yourwealth.com, or through my website, wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. And we try to get back to emailers or those who are asking life and financial questions, how it relates back to money. Try to get back to you within 24, 48 hours. And then once in a while, we'll answer these very questions on air. Of course, we change the names, so we're not saying it's Bob from Texas when it's really Bob from Texas. We'll typically make up a name and a state, and even sometimes throw in celebrity names, which Andrea likes to do. So with that, Andrea Risk is here with me. She's a question asking expert, and she's gonna go continue the email bag. Oh wait, I do have a story for you here.
Okay, let's hear it.
Are you excited to get right to the next question?
No, absolutely. Give us a story.
This is something that we can relate to here. A lot of Atlantans. That the fellow by the name of Don Keough, who used to be the president of Coca-Cola for many, many years, along with Robert Quisetta, and he recently passed away. He was 88 years old and just a wonderful individual, charitable, someone that is loved by many Atlantans nationally and all over the world because he traveled, obviously, extensively with Coca-Cola and a lot of his charity work. But the interesting story, so there was an interview that I heard about him, and the interview was with Warren Buffett.
Interesting.
Because they became friends. They happened to, talking about two power players, in their 20s, they happened to live across the street from each other.
Really?
In Omaha, Nebraska. The same house that Warren Buffett lives today. So we're talking...
It's fascinating.
We're talking decades and decades. We're talking 50, 60 years ago, right? That's when they were... Really, 60 years ago. They were in their 20s. He just passed away. He was 88. Warren Buffett's 84. So they lived across the street from each other. They didn't know each other all that well, but Buffett in the early years, for the first 6 years, I didn't even know this, worked out of his house. As he was starting Berkshire Hathaway and just becoming an investor. And I don't think he'd even started Berkshire at this time, but he was just working out of like a sunroom and as an investor. And he got to know his neighbor, Don Keough, eventually became the president of Coca-Cola. And one day, about a year into it or 2 years into to living across the street from each other, Buffett's working out of his house. Don's always going to work. Don's kids got to know Buffett's kids because during the summer, they would go over and play. Don's driving to work, looking at his neighbor. This guy, Buffett, doesn't even leave the house. Does this guy not even really have a real job? So he didn't really think a lot. He didn't really know him well and didn't really think he was anything special at all, obviously. One day, Buffett came over and said, hey, look, your kids are great. You know, I love your kids. And because they would go over and Warren would like push him on the swing. And he said, I've got an idea for you. If you'll give me $10,000, I've got an idea of this educational fund that could really be helpful to your kids someday. And Don just said, yeah, I'll think about it, whatever. He went and told his wife, he said, this guy across the street doesn't even go to a job, wants me to give him 10 grand to invest. He goes, is he crazy? So, of course, he basically said no and ignored Warren Buffett for after that. Well, they eventually moved, and for one reason or another, they kind of stayed in touch. And then later in their lives became friends. Because one day at Coca-Cola, they realized somebody big was buying lots of Coca-Cola stock. And Don said, you know, I have an idea who it is. And he called Warren Buffett and he basically said, look, have you been buying a few shares of Coca-Cola? The interviewer asked, well, what would that, so he didn't invest the 10 grand. He said, what would the 10 grand be worth today? This is to Warren Buffett.
If Keough had invested it all those years ago.
If he had taken Warren up on his offer, crossed the street in the cul-de-sac, hey, I've got, if you give me $10,000, I think I'd make some money with it. Did I tell you the story?
No.
Guess how much it would be worth.
How much?
This is Buffett said, about 400, 410 million.
So $410 million.
So the 10 grand, now again, remember, this is like the very, very beginning of Warren Buffett's career. He's in his 20s. Today, and he's 84, the 10,000 would be worth over $400 million.
It's amazing.
It's an unbelievable story. But Ryan and I did the math on this. if you look at a 60-year horizon, it takes about a 19% annual rate of return for 10 grand to turn into about 400 million, which is a tremendous rate of return. 19% doesn't sound that amazing, though, right? But to do it compounded over that many years.
Absolutely. But would you give your wacky neighbor 10 grand who plays with your kids instead of going to work?
Exactly. That's what's it's just such a fascinating story. You never know who's across the street.
You really don't. You absolutely don't.
You never know if you live across from the next Warren Buffett. Isn't that amazing?
It's unbelievable.
Anyway, do we even have time for an email bag question?
We do.
Let's do it.
This
Let's
is a good
it.
One. All right. So this is from David in Cumming, Georgia.
David Copperfield
in
Cumming.
Yes, Copperfield Orc. When people talk about having $1 million for retirement, are they including Social Security and pension payments? We will be 66 in 4 years and will get about $6,000 a month in social and pensions. We have about $300,000 in investments now. Are we in the ballpark for retirement? Thanks.
They. I love the most commonly quoted person in America. They. They say you need $1 million. Yes. The answer is yes. When I say that you need $500,000 bare minimum checkpoint as a happy retiree, or $1 million, whatever that number is, absolutely I'm including Social Security. Because if you and your wife have worked, or even if one spouse hasn't worked, you're still going to get, both are going to get Social Security if you're still married. And if that number is $2,000 a month each, you're talking about $4,000 a month, you're talking about $48,000 a year. I mean, that's real money. So there's no question that Social Security comes into play. Then off the million, you end up with my rule of thumb, $1,000 a month rules for every $240,000 you have, it's $1,000 a month. So the question here is, I think of it also as I call it the rich ratio. And this is very simple. You just take your monthly earnings and then divide it by your monthly spending need. So if you just use round numbers, and you want that to be above one. So you take what you're going to be able to bring in. So let's say you have social and you have pension, and let's say that all adds up to $4,000 a month. Then if you have another $6,000 worth of investment income per month, that's a lot of money. That would be at 5% a year. You'd need $1.4 million saved up to do that. Then you end up with $6,000 a month plus four in social and pension. That's $10,000. Then you've got to net that down for taxes. So your 10 nets down to let's call it 8. And if you only need $7,000 a month in spending, well, 8 divided by 7, you've got a rich ratio of about 1:1:1:2. And that means you have plenty of cash flow to support your spending. So if they have $6,000 a month in pensions and Social Security, which is a big number, $6,000, and they end up saving $1 million, that $1 million, to his question, even at only 4% a year, should generate $40,000 a year. $40,000 a year plus 6 times 12 is another 72. So you're looking at 72 plus 40, yeah, $112,000 a year. And now that's gross, but it nets down to 85 or 90. And that, again, if they can live on $90,000 or less, then yeah, $1 million absolutely works for that family. Now, it really helps to have a pension, and it really helps to have a pretty healthy Social Security amount. But from the math here, they seem to be in the ballpark and in really, really good shape. So I think that's very realistic to me.
And they're 66 years old. So they are what?
They want to retire? So they are 66 in just 4 years. And they're
they're 62 now.
Oh, okay. So now they have 300,000. So they really only have another 4 or 5 years. So let's just say they are able to save another 20,000 a year for the next 4 years. That's another 80. So they're going to have, call it 400,000. So let's just be realistic. $400,000. At 5% a year is 20,000 plus, so that's divided by 12 is $1,600 a month plus 6,000 in social and pension. It's $7,500 a month. Gross. And that's very doable.
Absolutely.
So this couple doesn't really necessarily need $1 million. It's because they have this wonderfully large pension / social that in itself is worth about $1.5 million. In order to get $6,000 a month forever, that was the math I was doing earlier, but $6,000 a month, times 12 is $72,000 a year. Divide that by 5% a year, you'd need $1.4 million. So that to me makes sense. And as long as they can live on that, they're in really good shape.
So they are in the really in the ballpark to be able to retire when they want to.
They could retire. Again, I don't know exactly what their spending is, but from most families that I have worked with over the years, if they don't have a mortgage, then $6,000 or $7,000 a month net is pretty awesome. And again, in order to have a pension and social that's $6,000 a month for life, that's the equivalent of having at least $1.2 million, $1.3 million. So then you add that to the $300 or $400 that they'll have. That sounds like a happy retiree to me. I like it. All right, we're going to come back with more questions here on Money Matters. It's Email Bag Sunday. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here with Andrea Risk, helping us to read your questions that you've emailed in, changing names and states so that we protect your anonymity. With that, stay tuned. News, weather, traffic, then more Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Good morning and welcome to Money Matters here on WSB Radio. I'm here every Sunday morning. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning from 9 to 11 to take your calls, your questions, and today answer some emails. We get a lot of great emails, interesting scenarios kind of from all over the map and all over the country. And once in a while, we'll try to get through some of that. We call it our email bag. Andrea Risk is here with me. Mm-hmm. Thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you like having to do this? Because you're not really a financial person.
I am not, but I'm learning a lot. So actually, I like it a lot. This is fun.
Well, okay. Let's go with our next question.
All right. So you're going to love this one because I know you, and this is going to be your favorite question of the day. This is from Toby. And Toby asks, I have cash and I'm looking for some safe yield. I was pitched on an indexed annuity or a way to get yield without risk.
What?
Is this true? And go to town, sir. I know you're going to enjoy this.
You did that one. I don't have a lot of time. So I'll say this. I consistently get questions about index annuities for years now. And Ryan Ely and I have spent a lot of time analyzing some of these offerings, if you will. And the reality is that they're just not. I don't know why they've become so prolific. And I guess the answer is that if you don't know what your other options are, then they kind of sound good on the surface. The pitch is, hey, you put in your money, you can never lose, but you get to share some of the upside of the market. And you think market, you think, 10% a year on average, I'll take even half that. So I'll get 5% with no downside. Doesn't work that way. The reality here is that all the math is skewed towards the insurance company. The guarantee is really on the insurance company. And there's really no such thing as any guarantee unless it's coming from the U.S. government. And even that's a little, obviously, wobbly. And then the annuity companies are able to change the rules on you in an insurance contract. From what I've seen over the years, very few people ever are happy they bought an index annuity. Most people are wishing they could get out of an index annuity because all the numbers are skewed towards the insurance company in their favor, is that you end up with maybe 1-2% a year, maybe a little bit more. But then you've got all these restrictions and handcuffs and lockups and commissions and everything. So my advice on these is to get educated on your other options. And if you really just want something that's safe, that you're going to get 1-2% a year with truly no risk, just buy a treasury ladder, for goodness sakes, and get treasury yield that's guaranteed by the government and still have liquidity and get out of it if you really want to. So no, I am not a fan of index annuities, mostly because there are so many other options if you really want to take a super low risk approach. All right, that does it for this Sunday.
Thanks for having me.
No. Thank you for being here. You're an expert in asking financial questions.
Right.
With that, enjoy the rest of your Sunday, Andrea. Enjoy all of our listeners. Enjoy the rest of this Sunday. If you want to find me and the Money Matters team, easy to do so. Email me, radio@yourwealth.com. My website, Wes Moss, WESMOSS.com. Stay tuned for news, weather, traffic right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.